The Nimera saved my life once. The Rodare owe her a great debt.
Does this mean that your treaty with us is null and void?
I formed a treaty with you, Richard, and I will hold to that because I know you are a man that honors his obligations and remembers his duty to his allies. But I owe Anita a personal debt, and I am honor-bound to uphold that as well.
If it comes to fighting, who will you fight with? Us or the Leopards?
I hope most sincerely that it does not come to that, but I came with the Leopards, and we will go with them, under whatever circumstances that leave-taking will be.
You have destroyed your people, Jacob said.
Richard turned on him.
I am Ulfric here, Jacob, not you. I say what will be destroyed and what will not.
I meant no offense, Ulfric.
But his voice made the words a lie.
I meant only that if it comes to a fight, the rats cannot defeat us. Perhaps their king would like to reconsider who he owes a debt of honor to.
A debt of honor exists, whether you want it to or not, Raphael said. Richard understands what it means to owe an honor debt. That is why I know that Richard will honor our treaty. I have no such assurances when it comes to other members of this pack.
There. He'd said it.
It was as close to saying, I don't trust you, Jacob, as he could get. A spreading well of silence filled the clearing so that the brush of cloth, the shift of a furred body, was suddenly loud. Richard's hands tightened on the arms of his throne. I watched him because he was shielding so tight against me that I couldn't feel him, but I could watch him think.
Are you saying that if I am no longer Ulfric, that the treaty no longer holds?
Yes, that is what I'm saying. Richard and Raphael stared at each other for a long time. Then the faintest of smiles played on Richard's lips.
I have no plans to step down as Ulfric, so the treaty should be secure for a while, unless Jacob has other plans.
That one statement sent a wave of unease through the waiting werewolves. You could feel it, see it spreading out through them, as if they smelled a trap of some kind. Jacob looked surprised, shocked. He was a perfect stranger, but I watched the confusion play over his face as he tried to think of what to say. If he said he had no designs on the throne, then he would be forsworn, and the shapeshifters were a little touchy about things like that. Jacob was either going to have to lie or declare his intentions, and the look on his face said clearly he wasn't ready to do that. A woman's voice came from the right, clear and ringing like she'd had stage training.
Aren't we getting distracted from the business at hand? I, for one, am very interested in choosing the new Lupa.
The woman was tall, but built all of curves, voluptuous the way that movie stars in the 50s had been. She seemed soft, feminine, yet she stalked over the ground in a swaying glide, half sex on the hoof and half predatory, like she'd lure you in by playing victim, fuck you till you cried for mercy, then eat your face off. She was even wearing a dress, one that clung to her curves and had a neckline so low that you knew she had to be wearing a bra. Breasts that size didn't do perky without some help. She stalked barefoot, her deep red hair styled and perfect, falling just above her shoulders in a burnished shine.
We will get around to choosing the new Lupa, Richard said.
She dropped to her knees in front of the throne, folding the dress under her thighs, very ladylike, though making sure to lean forward enough for Richard to look straight down her cleavage. I didn't like her much.
You can't blame us for being eager, Ulfric. One of us,
and she hesitated, making it clear that the us was for politeness' sake,
will be chosen Lupa and become your mate all in one glorious night.
Her voice had dropped to a sultry murmur, still loud enough to be heard. Nope. Didn't like her. I had no room to bitch with Micah standing beside me, but that didn't matter. Logic had nothing to do with it. I wanted to grab a handful of that bottle-dyed red hair and hurt her. It wasn't until Micah touched my arm that I realized I'd been caressing one of the knives in its wrist sheath. Sometimes I touch my weapons when I'm nervous. Sometimes my body just betrays my thoughts. I forced my hands to be still, but I was so not happy.
Go back with the other candidates, Paris, Richard said.
He was carefully not looking at her, as if he were afraid to. That didn't make it better. It made it worse. She leaned forward, putting a hand on his knee. He jumped.
You can't blame us for being eager, Ulfric. We've all wanted you for so very long.
Richard's face had thinned down with anger.
Sylvie, he said.
Sylvie smiled, and it was a smile of pure evil pleasure. She grabbed Paris's wrist and dragged her, none too gently, to her feet. Paris was a good 2 inches taller, but Sylvie's power, her beast, made her seem 10 feet tall.
The Ulfric told you to go back and stand with the other candidates. Do it.
She gave Paris a little shove towards the crowd. The woman stumbled but regained her composure, smoothing the tight dress down over her thighs. Sylvie had turned to walk back to her place at Richard's side when Paris said,
I heard you liked it rough.
Sylvie froze, and I didn't need to see her face to feel the instant rage that radiated from her. I knew before she turned, slowly, muscles tense, that her eyes had bled to wolf amber.
What did you say?
Sylvie,
Richard said, voice soft. It wasn't a command, it was a request. I think if he'd made it a command, she'd have fought it, demanded some sort of satisfaction. But it was a request. She turned back to Richard.
Yes, Ulfric.
Take your place, please.
She went back to take her place as Freki on his right side. But the anger boiled around her like nearly visible heat off a summer road.
I apologize to the Swan King for not recognizing him sooner, but we've only met once.
Yes,
Donovan Rhys said.
I remember.
Welcome to our Lupinar. I would give you safe passage among us, but I have to know why you are here before I can do that.
I am here because the Nimir Ra rescued my swan manes from the people that nearly killed her. She risked her life for them. I am here at her side tonight as an ally.
I can't grant you safe passage, Donovan, because if things go badly, it will be a fight. If you're Anita's ally, you'll be in the middle of it.
She risked her life for my people. I can do no less.
Richard nodded, and I watched an understanding pass between them. Birds of an honorable feather, so to speak.
Does she save every shapeshifter she comes across in trouble?
Jacob asked, and he made it derisive. Richard started to say something, and Sylvie stepped forward, touching his arm. He gave a small nod and let her speak.
How many of us has Anita saved from torture or death?
She raised her own hand. Jamil stepped out from around the throne and raised his own. All my leopards raised their hands like a small forest of gratitude. Raphael raised his hand. I finally spotted Louis, his lieutenant, and Ronnie's boyfriend. He gave a small nod to me and raised his own hand. Richard stood and raised his hand. There were other hands here and there. Then Irving Griswold, mild-mannered reporter and werewolf, stepped forward. His glasses reflected the firelight so that he looked blind. He looked like a tall, slightly balding cherub with eyes of flame.
What would have happened if Anita hadn't saved Sylvie from the Vampire Council's torture? Sylvie's strong, but what if she had broken? She's dominant enough to call most of us in, to have forced us to give ourselves over to the Vampire Council.
Irving raised his hand.
She saved us all.
Hands went up among the werewolves until nearly half of them were holding a hand up. It made my throat tight, my eyes burn. I wasn't going to cry, but if someone hugged me, I couldn't be sure of that. Louis stepped forward, small, dark, and handsome, with his short black hair cut neat.
Raphael is a strong king, so strong that if the Vampire Council had broken him, none of us could have refused his call. We would all have been at their mercy. You all saw what they did to him and how long it took him to heal. Anita saved all the Rodair in this city.
The rats raised their hands. All of them. Sylvie said,
Look around you. Do you really want to lose Anita as our Lupa? Most of you remember what it was like with Reyna. Do you want to go back to that?
She's not Lucoy,
Jacob said. A few others said the same thing, but not many.
If your only objection to her is that she's not a werewolf, Sylvie said,
then that's a poor excuse for losing Anita.
Losing her,
Jacob said.
This is the first time I've ever seen her. I've been with this pack for 5 months, and this is the first time I've set eyes on your precious Lupa. We can't lose something we never had.
There was a lot of support for that. A lot of howls, cries of yeah, applause even. I couldn't blame them on this one. I stepped forward, moving until I stood alone between my allies and the throne. Silence fell around the clearing until you could hear the torches sizzling. Richard stared down at me. I could meet his eyes now. I made sure my voice carried when I said, "Jacob's right." Sylvie looked startled. So did Jacob. And there was movement behind me as people startled. "I haven't been much of a Lupa to the Thronos Roki clan, but I didn't know I was supposed to be. I was just the Ulfric's girlfriend. I had my hands full with the were-leopards, and I trusted Richard to take care of the wolves. The leopards had no one but me." I turned and faced the crowd. "I was human, not fit to be Lupa or Nimera." The crowd's murmur was louder this time. "I don't know if you've all heard, but there was an accident in the fight that saved the Swanmanes. I may be Nimera for real in a few weeks. We won't know for sure, but it seems likely." They were quiet now, watching me. Human eyes, wolf eyes, rats, leopards, but every face held intelligence, a burning concentration.
"There's nothing I can do about that. We'll just have to wait and see, but my leopard did not injure me on purpose. I will stake my word of honor on that. I'm told that Gregory stands accused of killing your Lupa."
I raised my hands out from my body.
"Here I stand, alive and well. If you lose me as your Lupa, it won't be because Gregory took me from you. It will be because you choose to let me go. If that's what you want, fine. I don't blame you. Until tonight, until just a few minutes ago, I didn't think I was doing a very good job as Nimera, let alone trying to be human Lupa. Now I think maybe I was wrong. Maybe if I'd stayed around more, things would be better. I did what I thought was right at the time. If you don't want me as Lupa, that's your right, but don't punish a fellow shapeshifter for an accident that happened during a fight where he saved me from getting my heart dug out of my chest."
"A pretty speech," Jacob said.
"But we've already voted, and your leopard has to pay the price, unless you're shapeshifter enough to win him back."
I looked back, not at Jacob, but at Richard. "Richard, please." He shook his head.
"I can't undo the vote, Anita. I would if I could."
He sounded tired. I sighed. "Fine. How do I win Gregory back?"
"She needs to stop being Lupa before she can be Nimera."
This from Paris, who, though in the back of the crowd, still managed to make her voice ring over the clearing.
"I thought you voted me out as Lupa," I said.
"They have," Richard said. "But to make it official by our laws, there's a ceremony that will sever your ties to us."
"Is it a long ceremony?" I asked.
"It can be," he said.
"Let me get Gregory out first, then I'll do whatever Lukoi ceremony you want me to do." "You have the right to refuse to step down," Sylvie said.
I looked at Richard.
"You have that right."
His face, his voice were neutral as he said it. I couldn't tell if he was happy or sad about the idea. "What happens if I refuse?"
"You'd have to defend your right to be Lupa, either by one-on-one combat with any dominant that wants the job."
And he stopped there. Sylvie looked at him, but it was Jacob who finished.
"Or you can prove that you're Lupa enough to keep the job by anointing the throne."
I just looked at him and shrugged. "Anointing the throne? What does that mean?"
"You fuck the Ulfric on the throne in front of all of us."
I was already shaking my head. Somehow I don't think either Richard or I are up to public sex.
"It's a little more complicated than that,"
Richard said. He looked at me, and there was so much in his eyes, anger, pain, that it hurt to hold his gaze.
"Sex alone isn't enough. We'd have to have a mystical connection between our beasts."
He was quiet, and I thought he'd finished, but he hadn't.
"Like you have, with your Nimiraj.
We stared at each other. I couldn't think of anything good to say, but I had to say something. I'm sorry. My voice came out soft, almost sad.
Don't apologize, he said.
Why not?
It's not your fault. It's mine.
That made me widen my eyes at him. How so?
I should have known you'd have that kind of bond with your mate. You're more powerful as a human than most true Lupas.
I looked at him. What are you saying, Richard? That you wish you'd made me one of you while you had the chance? He lowered his eyes as if he couldn't bear for me to see his expression anymore. I stepped closer, close enough to touch him, close enough so that his vibrating energy spilled like a march of insects across my skin. It made me shiver. But I felt something else, something I'd never felt before, not with Richard. My beast spilled over my skin and reached out like a playful kitten to swat at Richard's power. The energies sparked against each other, and I could almost see the play of colors in my head, like flint and steel being struck against one another, except in technicolor. I heard Richard catch his breath. His eyes were very wide. His voice came hoarse, almost strangled.
Did you do that on purpose?
I shook my head. I didn't trust myself to speak. The sparks had quieted, and it was as if I were leaning against a nearly solid wall of power, his and mine, as if I could have leaned against that energy and it alone would have kept us from touching. I finally found my voice, but it was a whisper. What's happening?
The marriage of the marks, I think,
he said, voice almost equally soft. I wanted so badly to reach through that power and touch him, to see if the beasts would roll through each other like they did for Micah and me. I knew it was silly. He was wolf, and apparently I was leopard, so our beasts wouldn't recognize each other. But I'd loved Richard for so long, and we were bound to each other by Jean-Claude's marks, and I carried a piece of his beast inside me. I had to know. I had to know if I could have with Richard what I had with Micah. My hand moved through the power, and it was like shoving it into an electric socket. The energy was so strong, it bit along my skin. I was reaching for his shoulder, a nice neutral place to touch someone, when he rolled off the side of the throne and was suddenly standing beside it. He'd moved so fast I couldn't follow with my eyes. I'd seen the beginning of the movement and the end, but the middle? I'd blinked and missed it.
No, Anita, he said. No. If we can't ever touch again, I don't want to feel your beast. We may not be the same animal, but it will be more than anything we've ever had between us. I couldn't bear it.
I let my hand fall to my side and stepped back far enough from the throne for him to regain his seat. I wasn't apologizing again, but I wanted to. I wanted to cry for both of us or scream. I know the universe has a sense of irony, and sometimes you get reminded just how sadistic that can be. I would finally have to accept his furry half, because I'd have one of my own. I could be Richard's nearly perfect lover at long last, and we could never touch each other again. 24. Richard was sitting on his throne again, and I was standing back far enough for him to feel safe. Raphael, Micah, and Rhys had all moved up beside me, a half-circle of kings at my back. It should have made me feel secure. It didn't. I was tired, so terribly tired, so terribly sad. Even with Micah at my back, I couldn't stop looking at Richard, couldn't stop wondering, what if? Oh, I knew I'd never have allowed him to make me a werewolf on purpose, but a small part of me wondered. But I told that small part to shut up, and I got down to business. I want Gregory back, unharmed. How do I do that according to Lukoi law? Richard said,
Jacob.
That one word sounded as tired as I felt. Jacob stepped forward, obviously pleased with himself.
Your leopard is here on our land, and we've done nothing to hide his scent trail. If you can track him, You can take him home.
I raised my eyebrows at him. I have to follow a scent trail like a dog?
If you were a true shapeshifter, you could do it,
Jacob said.
This isn't a fair test,
Raphael said.
She hasn't had her first change. Most of our secondary powers don't appear until after our first full moon.
It doesn't have to be scenting,
Richard said,
but it must be something that only a shapeshifter could do. Something that only a shifter powerful enough to truly be Nimera or Lupa could do.
He was looking at me when he said it, and there was something in his eyes, something he was trying to tell me.
That doesn't sound very fair either,
Micah said. Richard kept looking at me, willing me to understand him. I didn't know why he didn't just drop his shields and let me see his mind. Almost as if Richard had read my mind, he said,
No werewolf or were-rat or were-leopard, no one, can aid you in finding your leopard. If anyone interferes in any way, then the test is invalid, and he'll die.
Even if that help is metaphysical? I asked. Richard nodded.
Even if.
I looked at him, studied his face, and frowned. I finally shook my head. I'd had a vision of where Gregory was and under what circumstances, but it gave me no real clue. All I really needed to do was ask someone where a hole was with bones at the bottom. But I couldn't ask anyone there. Then I had an idea. Can I use my own metaphysical abilities to aid me? Richard nodded. I looked at Jacob because I knew the objection would come from him, if anyone.
I don't think your necromancy is going to help you locate your leopard.
Actually, it might have. If the bones Gregory was lying on were the largest burial site in the area, then I might be able to track the bones and find him. Or I might spend all night chasing after piles of buried animals or old Indian graves. I had a faster way. Maybe not better, but faster. I sat down on the ground, Indian fashion, resting my hands lightly on my knees.
What are you doing?
Jacob asked. I'm going to call the Munin, I said. He laughed, a loud bray of sound.
Oh, this should be good.
I closed my eyes, and I opened that part of me that dealt with the dead. I've heard Marianne and her friends describe it to be like opening a door, but it's so much a part of me that it's more like unclenching a hand, like opening something in my body that is as natural as reaching across the table for the salt. That might sound like an awfully mundane description of something mystical, but the mystical stuff truly is a part of everyday life. It's always there. We just choose to ignore it. The Munin are the spirits of the dead, put into a sort of racial memory bank that can be accessed by Lukoi who have the ability to speak with them. It's a rare ability. To my knowledge, no one in Richard's pack could do it. But I could. The Munin are just another type of dead, and I'm good with the dead. In Tennessee, the Munin of Vern and Marianne's pack had come quickly and eagerly, so very close to being real ghosts, crowding around me, eager to speak. I'd practiced until I could pick and choose who would join with me and be able to communicate. It was close enough to channeling or mediumship that Marianne had suggested I could probably do this with normal ghosts if I wanted. I didn't want to. I didn't like sharing my body with another being, dead or alive. Creeped me out. Yes, it did. I waited to feel the press of the Munin spreading around me, like a ghostly card deck that I could shuffle and pick the very card I wanted. Nothing happened. The Munin did not come. Or rather, a gathering of Munin did not come. There was always one Munin that came when I called, and sometimes when I didn't. Reyna was the only Munin of Richard's pack that traveled with me always. Even in Tennessee, surrounded by Munin from a different clan line, Reyna was still there. Marianne said that Reyna and I had an etheric bond, though she wasn't sure why. I'd managed to call Munin hundreds of years old, and Reyna, the very recently dead, came with more than ease. But Marcus, the previous Ulfric, remained elusive. I'd thought with my newfound control I'd be able to call him, but not only was Marcus not there, no one was there. The clearing was empty of spirits. It shouldn't have been. This was the spot where they consumed their dead, each pack member eating the flesh to take on the memories and courage, or faults, of the recently dead. They could choose not to feed, but it was like the ultimate excommunication. Reyna had been a bad person, and I wondered sometimes what exactly you had to do to get excommunicated from the Lukoi. Reyna had been so bad that I would have let her go, but she was powerful. Maybe that's why she was still hanging around. Though hanging around implied she was like the phantoms of Vern's pack, and she wasn't. She was internal to me, as if she poured out from inside my body, rather than pouring into me from outside. Marianne still couldn't explain why it worked that way for Reyna and me. Some things you just accept and work around, because to do anything else is to butt your head against a brick wall. The wall will not break first. Reyna filled me like a hand inside a glove, and I was the glove. But I'd worked a long time to be able to control her. We'd worked out a deal of sorts. I used her memories and powers, and I let her have some fun. The problem was that Reyna had been a sexually sadistic nymphomaniac when alive, and death hadn't changed her much. I opened my eyes and felt her smile curve my lips, felt my face take on her expression. I rose to my feet in a graceful line, and even my walk was different. Once, I'd hated that. Now I shrugged it off as the price of doing business. She laughed, full-throated, the kind of laugh that makes a man look in a bar. Her laugh was deeper than mine, contralto, a practiced seduction of sound. Richard went pale, hands gripping the arms of his throne.
Anita?
He made it a question.
Guess again, my honey wolf.
He flinched at the nickname. In wolf form, Richard is a ginger color like red honey, though I'd never really thought of it like that before. Trust Reyna to think of something thick and sticky when she looked at a man. Her words came out of my mouth.
Don't be bitchy when you called me for help.
I nodded, and it was my voice that explained to Richard's confused frown. I was thinking something less than charitable about her. She didn't like it. Jacob walked towards me and stopped when I looked at him with Reyna's expression.
You can't have called Munin. You're not Lukoi.
Strange, but it hadn't even occurred to me that being a leopard might mean I couldn't call Munin. It might explain why the other Munin hadn't come when I called. You said my necromancy wouldn't help me, Jacob. Can't have it both ways. Either I'm Lukoi enough to call the Munin, or I'm necromancer enough to help myself. We, Reyna and me, stalked towards the tall, shirtless man. Reyna liked him. Reyna liked most men. Especially if the man was someone she'd never had sex with, and among the pack, that had been a short list. But Jacob and more than 20 others were new. She looked out over the pack and picked out the new faces. She hesitated over Paris and didn't like her either. You can't have too many alpha bitches in one pack without them fighting amongst themselves. I felt something I hadn't felt before from Reyna. Caution. She didn't like how many new people Richard had allowed into the pack in such a short space of time. It worried her. I realized for the first time that it hadn't just been love that made Marcus put up with her as Lupa. She was powerful, but more than that, in her own twisted way, she did care about the pack, and she and I were in perfect agreement on one thing. Richard had been careless with it. But we both felt we could fix it. It was almost scary that the wicked bitch of the West and I were in such perfect agreement. Either I had been corrupted, or Reyna had never been quite as corrupt as I thought. I wasn't sure which idea bothered me more. Of course, she thought we should seduce Richard into letting us kill a few select people, and I was still hoping that a slightly less sweet reason would prevail. Reyna thought I was a fool, and I wasn't sure I didn't agree with her. Scarier and scarier.
Anita.
Richard said my name again, hesitant, as if he wasn't sure I was in there. I turned, one hand coming up to my hair, flinging it back from my face. It was Raina's gesture, and I watched that one movement make not only Richard, but Sylvie and Jamil behind her, nervous. No, frightened. I could smell their fear. Raina's laugh bubbled out of my mouth because she liked it. I didn't. I never liked it when my friends were afraid of me. My enemies, fine, but not my friends. I'm here, Richard. I'm here. He stared at me.
The last time I saw you call Raina's Munin, you weren't able to think like yourself with her inside you.
I really didn't leave you for all these months just because I was afraid of how close we all were. I left to get my shit together, and part of that was learning how to control the Munin. Raina said,
"Control me? You wish."
She hadn't said it aloud, only in my head. It had taken me a long time to realize that some things were said out loud and some things weren't. It was confusing, but you got used to it. I said aloud what I'd seen in vision. I saw Gregory in a hole, naked, tied up, lying on a bed of bones. Where is it? Raina showed me in images. It was like a fast-forward picture show, but the images came with emotions, smashing into me one after the other. I saw a metal cap that screwed down with a tiny airway on top that let in enough light for you to see if the sun was high enough. There was a rope ladder that spilled down into the dark and was taken up when it wasn't needed. I was Raina, kneeling on a bed of bones, a human skull next to my knee. I had a syringe and injected its contents into a dark-haired man that was chained like I'd seen Gregory chained, ankles to wrists. He was gagged and blindfolded. When the needle went in, he whimpered and started to cry. The drugs were to keep him from changing. I turned him over on his side and saw that a bone fragment had cut into his naked groin. I bent towards the smell of fresh blood, fresh meat, and the absolutely intoxicating stink of fear that came off the man. Not man. Lucoy. I clawed my way up from my memory before Raina pressed our lips over him. I shoved it away from me, but I could still smell the fear, the drugs sweated out on his skin, the smell of soap from where Raina had cleaned him up daily before the abuse began. I knew his name had been Todd, and he'd talked to a reporter about the Lucoy, helped them set up a blind with a camera on a full moon, for money. Maybe he had deserved to die, but not like that. No one deserved to die like that. I came to myself lying on the ground in front of the throne, tears drying on my face. Jamil and Shangda were standing between me and the crowd that had moved to help me. Claudia and Igor were facing off with them, and Raphael had Micah by the arm, trying to convince him not to fight his way to me. Merle and Noah were moving up to join Claudia and Igor. This was all about to go to hell. I propped myself up on my arms, and that small movement froze everyone in place. My voice came out hoarse, but mine.
I'm okay. I'm okay.
I'm not sure they believed me, but the tension level started to drop almost immediately. Good. I had enough problems tonight without a free-for-all breaking out. I looked up at Richard, and all I could feel was anger.
Is that how you're going to kill Gregory? Just leave him down in the oubliette until he rots?
My voice came out soft, because if I lost control of it, I wasn't sure how much other control I'd lose. I knew Raina. She wasn't gone. She'd want her reward first. She'd done her job. I knew where Gregory was. I even knew how to get there. She'd earned her prize. I didn't dare lose control of myself with her waiting like a shark just under the water.
I told them to put Gregory someplace far away from me. I didn't tell them to put him there.
I got to my feet slowly, even my body movements controlled. Muscles almost stiff with adrenaline and the need to lash out.
But you left him there. Who's been going down and pumping him full of drugs to keep him from turning? You don't have Raina to do the dirty work anymore. Who was it? Who was it?
I screamed it into his face, and the rage was all she needed. She poured over me, and the last control I might have had drowned because I wanted to hurt Richard. I wanted to do it. I hit him, closed fist, turning my body into it, twisting my hand at the end, putting all I had into it. I did what they taught us to do in martial arts class if it was for real. I aimed not at Richard's face, but at a point 2 inches inside his face. That was the real goal. I was back in a protective stance before Jamil and Shangda had time to react. I felt them move towards me, and felt others move forward too. The very thing I'd been trying to avoid, and I'd set it off. Reyna was laughing in my head, laughing at us all. 25. Richard was leaning over the arm of his throne, hair covering his face, when Sylvie grabbed me. I didn't fight her. Her fingers dug into my arms, and I knew I'd be bruised in the morning. Or maybe not. Maybe I'd heal it. Jacob was watching it all, astonished and pleased. I glanced back and found the bodyguards fighting. The leopards and rats were spreading out, the wolves beginning to close around them. I opened my mouth to yell something, but Richard's voice boomed over the clearing.
Enough!
That one word froze us all, and we turned shocked faces to him. He was standing in front of his throne, blood spattered across one shoulder and on his upper chest. One side of his mouth was a red ruin. I'd never been able to do that kind of damage before. He spat blood and said,
I'm not hurt. Some of you here have been inside the oubliette. You know what it was when Reyna still lived. Can you blame the Nimera for hating me for putting her leopard down there?
You could feel the tension begin to ease as the wolves pulled back. Richard had to order Jamil and Shangda to back off, and they and Claudia and Igor pushed at each other, like bullies that still didn't know who was tougher. I hadn't realized that Claudia was nearly 6 inches taller than Jamil, until they drew away from each other and he had to stare up at her to glare into her eyes. Sylvie whispered in my ear, Are you okay? I looked up at Richard. He was still bleeding. Other than embarrassed? Yeah. She let me go, slowly, as if not sure that I was safe to let loose. She hovered right next to me, between me and Richard, until he motioned her back. He stood in front of me and we stared at each other. Blood still dripped from his mouth.
You pack a hell of a punch now,
he said. I nodded. If you'd been human, what would that have done to you?
Broken my jaw, or maybe my neck.
I didn't mean it, I said.
Your Nimiraj will teach you how to judge your strength. You might stop going to your martial arts classes for a while, until you understand how your body works now.
Good advice, I said. He put his hand to his mouth, and it came away bright with blood. I had the urge to take his hand and lick the blood off of it. I wanted to climb his body and press my mouth to his and drink him down. The image was so vivid that I had to shut my eyes, so I couldn't see him standing there, half naked, bloodied, as if that would help me not want him. It didn't. I could smell his skin, the scent of him, and the fresh blood, like icing on a cake that I couldn't have.
Go get your leopard, Anita.
I opened my eyes and looked up at him. The oubliette was one of the things you fought against under Marcus. You said it was inhuman. I don't understand how you could use it.
He was in there for nearly a day before I asked where they'd put him. That was my fault.
But whose idea was it to put him there? I asked. Richard looked at Jacob. The look said it all. I walked over to the tall man. You never called me Jacob.
You got your leopard back, so what does it matter?
If you ever touch one of my people again, I'll kill you.
You going to pit your kitty cats against our pack?
I shook my head. No, Jacob. This is personal, between me and you. I know the rules. I make this a personal challenge between you and me, and that means that no one can help you.
Or you,
he said. He stared down at me, trying to use his height to intimidate me. It didn't work. I was used to being short. I gave him dead eyes until the smirk on his face faltered and he took one step back, which pissed him off. But he didn't retake that step. Jacob might be able to kill Richard in a fair fight for dominance, but he'd never be a true Ulfric. I stepped up close to him, close enough that a good insult would have made us touch. There's something weak in you, Jacob. I can smell it, and so can they. You may challenge Richard and win, but the pack will never accept you as Ulfric. You winning will tear them apart. It'll be a civil war. Something flashed through his eyes. That doesn't scare you. You don't care, I said. He stepped back from me, averting his eyes, his face. You heard the Ulfric. Go fetch your cat before we change our minds. You couldn't change your mind with 100-watt bulb and a team of helpers. He frowned at me then. Sometimes my humor is a little esoteric, or maybe it's just not funny. Jacob didn't find it funny.
Go with her, Sylvie. Make sure she gets everything she needs to get him out of there and back to the cars safely,
Richard said.
Are you sure you want me to go?
She asked.
We'll stay with him, Jamil said.
None of them tried to hide the fact that they were looking at Jacob when they said it. Not only did they not trust him, but they didn't care that he knew that they didn't trust him. How had things downgraded to that? What had been happening in the pack that no one had told me about yet? Plenty, from the looks on everyone's faces.
She can't go home until after the ceremony to break her ties with the pack, Jacob said.
She will go home when I say she goes home,
Richard said, voice low and full of that deep tone he got just before his voice crawled to something growling and inhuman.
The candidates have all come prepared tonight, Ulfric, dressed to please you.
Then they can dress to please me another night.
You disappoint.
You are about to overstep yourself, Jacob.
There must have been something in the way he said it, because Jacob finally shut up and gave a small bow. But he managed to make the movement mocking, and even from a distance you could tell he didn't mean it. But he lowered his eyes with his head as he bent at the waist. It's a mistake to take your eyes off your opponent. I asked, "Am I still Lupa until the ceremony?"
I suppose,
Richard said.
Yes,
Sylvie said. And they looked at each other. Good. I kicked Jacob in the face, though not as hard as I'd hit Richard. You didn't have to kick as hard to do the same kind of damage. I watched who in the pack made movements towards us and who didn't. I didn't see what everybody did, but I saw enough. Nobody near the throne made a single move to stop me or help him. Jacob staggered to his feet. His nose had burst like a piece of overripe fruit. Blood poured from his face, over his hands, like crimson water. He yelled at me, voice thick with the blood running down his throat.
You broke my nose!
I was in a defensive stance, the one I'd learned in Kenpo, just in case, but he didn't try to hit me back. I think he knew that there were too many people close at hand aching for an excuse to hurt him. Jacob was weak, but he was smarter than he looked, and not quite as arrogant.
I am Lupa of the Thronos Roque clan. Maybe just for tonight, but I am Lupa here. And he is Ulfric, and you will, by God, show some respect.
You have no right to question the giri of this clan. I've earned my place. You just fucked the Ulfric.
I laughed, and it startled him, made him unsure.
I know pack law, Jacob. It doesn't matter how I got the job. All that matters is that I am Lupa, and that means that except for the Ulfric, my word is law.
He looked uncertain, and the first faint trace of fear showed, like a bitter scent on the wind.
You are about to be dethroned as Lupa. Your word means nothing here.
I am Ulfric here, Jacob, not you, and I say whose word means something and whose does not. Until we have the ceremony breaking her ties with our pack, Anita is still Lupa, and I will support what she says.
And I, Sylvie said.
And I, Jamil said.
Shang Da said, I support my Ulfric in all things.
Then let's have a little irony, I said. Since it was Jacob's idea to put Gregory down in the oubliette, let him take Gregory's place.
Jacob started to protest, hands still trying to stop the blood flow from his nose.
You can't do that!
Oh, but she can,
Richard said, and there was a coldness in him that I'd never seen before. He wouldn't have come up with the idea himself, but he liked it. It let me know just how frustrated he'd been with Jacob.
Great, I said. Shall we all walk like civilized were-animals to the oubliette and rescue Gregory?
I will not go willingly down in that hole,
Jacob said.
His voice sounded a little funny, what with all the blood and his nose smashed to hell, but he sounded sure of himself. He shouldn't have been.
Your Ulfric and your Lupa have both decreed you will go, Sylvie said. To refuse the order is to refuse their authority.
Jamil continued.
To refuse their authority is to be declared outlaw from the clan.
Jacob glared at me when he said,
I will obey my Ulfric, but I do not acknowledge the Nimer Ra as my Lupa.
If I say she is Lupa, then to deny that is to question my authority as Ulfric,
Richard said. Jacob's eyes flicked to Richard.
We voted her out as our Lupa.
I'm voting her back in,
Richard said, voice deep and quiet, but loud enough that it carried.
Take another vote,
Jacob said, still trying to slow the blood from his face.
It will go against her again.
No, Jacob. You misunderstand me. I said I am voting her back in, not you, not anyone else. Just me.
Jacob's eyes widened.
You've preached about democracy and action since I joined this clan. Are you going back on all of it now?
Not on all of it. But we don't vote for Freki or Giri or for Hati and Skoll. We don't vote for Ulfric. Why should we vote for Lupa?
She's fucking the Nimer Raj. For that alone, she should be cast out as Lupa.
That's my problem. Not yours, not the Pack's.
You going to fuck her too? You think the Nimer Raj will share?
Richard started to say something, but Micah spoke first, taking a step from the rest, his guards flanking him.
Why don't you ask the Nimer Raj?
Richard looked at me, a question in his eyes. I shrugged.
Ask him, Jacob,
Richard said. The blood had almost stopped dripping from Richard's mouth.
You mind if the Ulfric fucks your Nimer Ra?
Jacob was still bleeding like a stuck pig. His chest, stomach, even the front of his shorts were soaked with blood.
I've agreed to any arrangement that Anita wishes, as long as she remains my Nimer Ra and lover.
You'd share her with another man?
Jacob said, voice thick with disbelief.
With two other men,
Micah said. That got almost everybody staring at him. I glanced at him, but mostly watched everyone else's reaction, especially Richard's. The others looked shocked. Richard looked thoughtful, as if Micah had finally done something he didn't hate.
She is the master of the city's human servant. Being my Nimer Ra has not changed that. I've felt the mark that binds them together, and it is not something that will break, as apparently the mark that binds her to the Ulfric will not break.
Nothing binds her to the Ulfric but her stubbornness and his,
Jacob said.
You think so?
Micah made it a question. Jacob looked uncertain. The blood from his nose was finally beginning to slow.
You've seen more than I've seen, if you think they still have a special bond.
More than any of us have seen.
This from Paris, who had pushed her way to the front of the crowd.
I am Nimer Raj. Of course I see more than you do.
His voice made it so logical, so matter of fact.
I am Giri, third in line to the throne.
Noah is my third in line. I think if you ask him, he will say he did not see what I saw either. Third in line to be Nimer Raj or Ulfric
is not the same as being the real thing. I fought not to give Micah the look of gratitude that I wanted to give him. We were still deep in bluff territory and not safely out the other side yet.
You can't mean to share your Lupa with two other men, Paris said.
She'd pushed her way to stand in front of Richard with her back to me. She was either being insulting or stupid. Maybe both. Richard looked down at her, and it wasn't a friendly look. Somehow, I didn't think Paris ever had a very good shot at being Lupa. Not with Richard in charge, anyway.
What I and my Lupa do or don't do is none of your business.
I saw her back stiffen as if he'd hit her, and maybe he had hit her pride. She'd really believed she could seduce him into picking her. I could have told her that sex wasn't the key to Richard's heart. He liked it well enough, but it wasn't one of his top priorities, not if it interfered with other things that were. It had been the same mistake that Raina had made with him, or one of the mistakes she'd made with him. Raina had never really understood Richard either.
You can't just arbitrarily decide you don't need a vote for this, Jacob said.
Yes,
Richard said.
I can.
I stepped up beside Jacob. That's what being Ulfric means, Jacob.
You're going back to a dictatorship after all the high-minded talk, Jacob said.
For tonight, it's sufficient that Anita is my Lupa, and that's not going to change. We'll discuss everything else later.
I say we put it to a vote whether the Pack wants to go back to being a dictatorship, Jacob said.
If you don't have someone set that nose, it may heal crooked, I said. He glared at me.
You stay out of this.
Richard called up a man with short brown hair and a neat mustache. He shrugged a backpack off his shoulders and began taking out medical supplies.
Fix his nose, Richard said, and then turned to Sylvie. When he's bandaged up, pick some people and escort Jacob to the oubliette.
There were murmurings in the crowd. One clear voice that I hadn't heard before said,
You can't do that!
Richard looked up, searching the crowd, and they fell silent under his gaze. His power rolled out from him like a burning, invisible fog, something that clung to your skin and made it hard to breathe. They avoided his eyes. Some even dropped down into submissive postures, their bodies low to the ground, eyes rolled up, arms and legs held close, making themselves seem small and defenseless, clearly asking not to be hurt.
I am Ulfric here. If there is any among you that disagree with that, then you are free to challenge the next in line, and the next after that, until you are Freki. Then declare yourself Fenrir, and you can challenge me. If you kill me, then you can be Ulfric, and you can set any damn policy you want. Until that time, shut the fuck up and follow my orders.
I don't think I'd ever heard Richard cuss. The silence was thick enough to cut. It was Jacob who cut it, like I knew he would. He pushed the mustached doctor away impatiently, while the shorter man tried to pack his nose with what looked like gauze.
Anita shows back up, and so does your backbone. Does she kill and torture for you like Raina did for Marcus?
Richard's fist struck out in a blur that I couldn't follow. It was almost magical. One moment Jacob was standing, the next moment he was on the ground with his eyes rolled back inside his head. Richard turned to the rest of them, the dried blood decorating his nude upper body, his hair turned to spun bronze in the torchlight. His eyes had gone wolf amber and looked more gold than normal against his darker than usual summer tan.
I thought we were people, not animals. I thought we could change the old ways and make something better. But we all felt it tonight when Anita and her leopards melded. Something safe and good. I've tried to be temperate and kind, and look where it's gotten us. Jacob said Anita is my backbone. No, but she's doing something right, something that I've missed. If you won't take kindness, then we'll have to try something else.
He looked at me with those alien eyes and said,
Let's go get your leopard. We need to get him out of the oubliette before Jacob comes too.
And he stalked off through the trees and left the rest of us to trail after.
There was no question about what to do next. We followed Richard into the trees. We followed the Ulfric, because you're supposed to follow your king, if he's worthy of the name. For the first time ever, I thought maybe, just maybe, Richard was going to be Ulfric after all. 26. The oubliette was a rounded metal lid set in the ground. The metal lid sat in the middle of a clearing scattered with tall, thin trees. Honeysuckle bushes ringed the lid on one side. Leaves were so thick on the ground that the area looked untouched. I would never have found it if I hadn't known it was there. Oubliette is French for a little place of forgetting, but that's not a direct translation. Oubliette simply means little forgetting, but what it is a place where you put people when you don't plan on ever letting them out. Traditionally, it's a hole where once you push someone in, they can't get out. You don't feed them or water them or talk to them or anything to them. You just walk away. There's a Scottish castle where they found an oubliette that had literally been walled up and forgotten, discovered only during modern remodeling. The floor was littered with bones and had an 18th century pocket watch in among the debris. It had an opening where you could see the main dining hall, could have smelled the food while you starved to death. I remembered wondering if you could hear the person screaming from the dining hall while you ate. Most oubliettes are more isolated, so that once you put him away, you never have to worry about the prisoner again. Two of the werewolves in nice human form knelt by the metal and began unscrewing two huge bolts in the lid. There was no key. You screwed the lid in place and just walked away. Fuck. The lid lifted off, and it took both of them to carry it away. Heavy, just in case the drugs didn't keep the adrenaline from pumping enough and cause the change. Even in animal form, you'd still have a hard time getting through the lid. I walked to the edge of the hole, and the smell drove me back. It smelled like an outhouse. I don't know why it surprised me. Gregory had been down there for, what, 3 days? Four? In the movies, they talk about you starving to death, the romantic stuff, if such horror is really romantic. But no one ever talks about your bowels moving, or the fact that when you have to go, you have to go. It's not romantic. It's just humiliating. Jamil brought a rope ladder and attached it with large metal clips to the side of the hole. The ladder fell away into the darkness with a dry, slithery sound. I forced myself to crawl back to the edge of the oubliette. I was prepared now for the smell, and underneath the ripe smell of life in too small a space was a dry smell, a dry, dusty smell. The smell of old bones, old death. Gregory wasn't the strongest person I knew, not even one of the top 100. What had it done to him to lie there in the dark with the stench of old bones, old death pressed against his body? Had they explained to him how they'd leave him there to die? Had they told him every time they screwed the lid back in place that they weren't coming back except to drug him? The hole was like a perfect blackness, darker than the star-filled night sky, darker than anything I'd seen in a long time. It was wide enough for Richard's broad shoulders to have scooted down into the dark, but barely. The longer I stared at it, the narrower it seemed to become, as if it were some great black mouth waiting to swallow me down. Have I mentioned that I'm claustrophobic? Richard came to stand beside me, peering down into the hole. He had an unlit flashlight in his hand. Something must have shone on my face because he said,
"Even we need some light to see by."
I held my hand out for the flashlight. He shook his head.
"I let this happen. I'll get him out."
I shook my head. "No. He's mine." He knelt beside me and spoke softly.
"I can smell your fear. I know you don't like close places."
I stared back into the hole and let myself acknowledge just how afraid I was. So afraid that I could taste something flat and metallic on my tongue. So afraid that my pulse was hammering in my throat like a trapped thing. My voice came out calm, normal. I was glad. It doesn't matter that I'm afraid. I touched the flashlight, tried to pull it from his hand, but he held on. And short of playing tug of war, which I would probably